Get ready. It's time to tee it up with Keith Jones.
Coming up on today's show, it's time to make time for Toski as we welcome the legend, Bob Toski, and special guest, Dennis Satisher. So stay tuned to get ready as you tee it up with Keith Jones.
All right.
Welcome to the show. So glad you'd be along. This hour, we're making time for Toski, but Toski wants to make time to have another guest on as well. So let's welcome Bob first to the show before it gets too crazy around here. Bobby boy, welcome back to the show. It's always a pleasure to have you on, my man.
Likewise, Keith.
Well, Bob, I got this package in, but Bob said, I'm going to send you something. Be watching for the mailman to come. And sure enough, I got this package this week, which we'll talk about this hour. I've got it sitting right here next to me, what have you. I'll let Bob do the intro on that, too. But he also said, hey, I want to bring on a guy who is really means a lot to me. And I met Dennis Satisher at Bob's birthday party at least a handful of years ago or so. And, of course, you know, Dennis, he was on the show before, and we talked about Caves Valley and the BMW championship because he was at Caves Valley, and people still rave about the, you know, kind of newly retired Dennis Satisher. But Bob, if you'd like to go ahead and welcome Dennis officially to the show, that's fine. You can have the platform, sir.
Dennis, I'm happy, so happy to have you on the air with Keith Jones, and of course, you know, you might want to tell Keith how we met and how we became friends.
Well, I'm happy to do that whenever you like, but whenever I'm with you, Bob, whether it's on a show like this or in person, you have that ability to make people feel great, and you have the ability to make them feel like they can do just about anything, and that's a gift from the big guy, Bob, but you have it.
Yes, it's a gift of giving, and
yep.
Yes, I appreciate that.
Well, for those that are not as familiar with Dennis as Bob and I are, from Pennsylvania and grew up in the Erie area and went on to play football at Duke University. And, oh, by the way, he decided I'm going to play golf too. So he kind of lettered there. He was a captain on the football team. He was there on a football scholarship. You know, those guys in Pennsylvania knew how to play some football, so I'm not surprised by that. But also lettered in golf for 3 years and then decides, hey, there's a course not too far from me down the road here. Why don't I go over to Pinehurst and start working there? And then the rest is kind of history. We'll talk about Dennis's journey throughout the years. But this apparently, according to Dennis, is kind of when you met Bob Toski. It's this guy named Toski. How did that come about?
Well, it was my senior year, and you mentioned it, I'm very proud of it. I finally got to play. I was the starting quarterback and captain of the team. But I'd always had golf in the back of my mind. My senior year in high school, I won the Pennsylvania State High School tournament. But football was the scholarship I had, and it was the way to really get out and get an education. But golf was always on the back of my mind. And we had an announcer for Duke football named Jim Thacker. And Jim was also working with Hughes Sports Network. And his color, his guy that was right there talking about, you know, the players and all the stuff, was a guy named Bob Toski. So I was talking with Jim, and I told him that I was going to try the tour school in 1972 was the year. And he said, well, if you're going to try and do that, you need to go see my friend Bob Toski. Well, I said, I'd love to see him. Where is he? He said he's at Ocean Reef. So I hopped in the car, and, of course, I'm 21, 22 years old, so I'm driving forever. And I get to Miami. I think I'm pretty close. And I'm not close. I got to go. I don't know how far it was. It seemed like forever.
Yeah, but you're in North Key Largo now.
We're down there, and there's this guy, little guy with a Ben Hogan hat, a Bob Toski hat, really. You know, and he's working with people, and I had an appointment. But, you know, Bob just kind of kept working with these guys, and, you know, it was probably an hour to an hour and a half. He finally comes over to me, and, you know, when he shakes hands, he almost kind of snuggles with you. You know, he kind of gets right up in there, and he looks up at me, and he says, Bob Toski here. I said, it's about time, Bob Toski. But that's how we started. And Bob, you wouldn't remember this, but you put a bench down because I was swinging a little from the outside in, and you put balls next to the bench, you know, like an inch away. And then, of course, Keith, you know this, he demonstrates beautifully. So he says, now watch me. And the ball is an inch from the bench on its side, you know, parallel to the target. Bob makes this beautiful swing, whoosh, knocks the ball out there. He says, okay, let me see you do it. And I think the first couple I hit the bench, you know, coming from the outside. But we got started, and at the end, the other thing, this was 53 years ago, Bob, 54 years ago.
It's amazing.
He said, he comes to me, and he snuggles up again. He says, Satisher, he says, you don't know a thing about the golf swing. He said, but I like you. and that's how we started. And, you know, I've worked with him and got better. And every time I was around him, he made me feel like I could climb the mountain. And I just kept going. And I went to the tour school that year and made it to the finals. There were 650 guys for 22 spots, three qualifiers, D.C., Kansas City, and L.A. And I was in the D.C. one. And I made it by one shot. I parred the last nine holes in a rainstorm to make it by one shot. And the finals were out at Napa Valley, Silverado, and they were playing the Kaiser Open the next week. And I roomed with Tom Kite and Jim Simons because I'd played the mini tour with them down in Tampa. And, you know, they were in the top 10. I was tied for 16th with two rounds to go, and my caddy doesn't show up on my seventh round. And playing with Barry Jekyll and Victor Regalado, and they had the Morton Knight suits and umbrellas that were huge and towels underneath, and I didn't have a caddy, so I had a pool cart and a towel, an umbrella that barely covered me, let alone my clubs. But I missed it by four shots and went back you know, to the mini tours, and would continue to see Bob and tried a second time and didn't make it. I didn't even make it to the finals.
Well, Dennis, I tell you, I can barely remember what I did 53 hours ago. I can tell you right now, as we speak, Toski remembers moving that bench 53 years ago.
Well, he put it, and he put his ball so close to the bench. I mean, half an inch. I started mine about 6 inches to the left. But anyway, what I did after I missed the second tour school was I said, you know, you stink at golf. You know, I didn't have any money. So I said, I'm going to go back to football. So I went back to Duke and coached the quarterbacks for 3 years. And that just wasn't quite it for me. You know, I missed the golf. But I said, you're not a player. You're going to go back and be a club pro. And that's when I started at Pinehurst. After tried the tour school, 3 years of coaching at Duke. And then I was driving the tractor. I was a 27-year-old Duke graduate driving that pickup Ranger with 15 baskets in it. So, but that's really, you know, as I started my career, and I would quit talking here in a minute, but as I started, Bob would always come wherever I was working and do a clinic, you know, play a nine-hole exhibition or something, and was always there whenever I called and whenever I asked him to come, he would find a way to get there. And, you know, and by association, you know, having Bob Toski as a mentor and as a guest of mine and doing things for wherever I was working, Bob just, you know, had that gift of making people feel good, you know, and he'd give me a plug or two. And we climbed the mountain, Bob. You know, we kept working from Pinehurst. I worked with Bill Strasbaugh at Columbia, and I worked for Bob Ross at Pine Tree, and I worked for Roger Maxwell at Camelback, and finally ended up at the Baltimore Country Club. I was there for 6 years, five farms, and then Caves Valley came out of the ground there, and I ended up being there 31 years and been retired four. But like so many of your friends, Bob, professional golfer friends, you just helped me in so many ways. I'd watch you and see how you were with people, and strong when you had to be, and softer and loving when they needed it. I can't say enough good things about you, Bob. And well, Keith, that's my story, and I'm sticking with it.
It's pretty good, Dennis. It's pretty good, Bob. What say you?
Dennis, you had so much athleticism that I always, but the odds of you qualifying, of course, you know, when I played on tour, I didn't have to qualify like you did. They were looking for players. All you had to do is pay your entry fee. And, of course, then we tee it up against about 140, 150 players.
Sure.
You had to beat how many? 600 and some odd.
650. They took 22.
Yeah, on tour. Look at the odds of the number of players and then the odds of how many places you were playing for. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And, of course, then you had the problem with the caddy not showing up. Probably if he had shown up, you would have qualified.
Maybe. And I shot 77, because grinded my guts out in that seventh round. And the eighth round, I was three under after six holes. And there was a par five later on the backside. I thought I had to get further under par. I go for it, plug it in a bank, and make a double bogey. But if I had parred in three under, I would have made it. So just the inexperience of just, playing one hole at a time and being patient and all that, I didn't have it.
Well, let me put it this way. You played a shot which was offensive golf, and you should have played a shot, a defensive golf. It's like in football, when to go for the long throw and when to go for the short one and so on.
Yeah.
And you played a high risk shot and ended up with a double.
Yeah. But I think Bob, I heard this number. You played in 216 tour events and made the cut in 213 of them. Is there any truth to that?
Well, you didn't have to work very hard to make the cut. All you had to do is hold on to the goddamn club and finish your swing, and you'd have been all right. And it was a lot easier than Dennis and what you went through. Of course, the money was so great then when you started playing that they made it more difficult for all of you to qualify, because once you qualify, you could finish second in the tournament and probably make $1 million.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're making at least that now. And the game, when I came along, Bob, and probably when you did too, we played all the sports. We played football, basketball, baseball. Finally, I got around to golf. And we just did. But now, and quarterbacks never lifted weights back then. They wanted us to be loose, Well, now these guys zero in on a sport. They've got trainers. They've got nutritionists. They've got all these videos to watch the great athletes and find out what makes whatever they're doing, pitching or hitting a golf shot or whatever, how to do it. And the athletes are better. They're bigger. They're stronger. They're kind of more committed to a sport rather than playing them all. And you can see the performance in all the sports is just fabulous. It really is.
Yeah, absolutely. We're with Dennis Satishier and Bob Toski. Heading to our first break. They're spending the hour. We'll be back.
Hi, this is Jim McLean. You're listening to Tee It Up with Keith Jones.
We'll be right back. What an hour so far as we're with Bob Toski. We always make time for Toski and his special guest, Dennis Satisher, renowned head professional, now retired, but he's working with Bob Ford, another retiree, and they're kind of dominating the golf industry from a different kind of knowledgeable venue, so to speak. But Dennis is certainly, every time I was at Caves Valley, because you know the BMW Championship was up there, and Matt Fuller doing a really nice job as the new head professional. But everywhere you walk around, and if you just mention D, you know, the first letter in Dennis's name, they knew exactly what you're talking about, and they cannot rave enough about that, what Dennis Satisher meant to that club, means to that club, and still continues to give back to the community and to that, Dennis. So, you know.
Well, it was, you know, my skill set there in that, Caves is a national club. You know, 2/3 of our membership are outside the state of Maryland. And I took a risk. I was 40 years old, 6 years at the Baltimore Country Club. And when Caves came, was coming out of the ground, you know, I talked with them, and I thought my skill set matched better with more of a national membership. And a place, usually the pros were trying to go to the older places, Wingfoot and Oakmont and places like that. But there's something about helping bring a club out of the ground and being a part of making it work. And the membership there was encouraged me to be that, you know, that part that kind of people were looking for. And I tried to make people feel like when I saw you, Keith, I've been waiting for you. I'm so glad you're here. And da-da-da-da-da. So it was a good match, and, you know, they were so good to me, and I just gave it all that I had. And I think the golf profession has moved outside, Bob and Keith. It's now, you know, people, your favorite anything has somebody or some people that make you feel good about going there. And a golf course is no different. So I think the day of the pro standing behind the counter waggling a 5-iron is gone. It's over. Being out there and on the tee or on the course or being interested in them and meeting their guests and making them feel like I've been waiting for them is today's golf professional. And Caves is one of those places I think people really, our members are extremely proud of what we've built there. And they can't wait to bring people there. They can't wait for them to play the golf course, to eat the food, to have our caddies, to meet the professional staff. And, you know, it worked for me, and it worked for Caves. Tom Fazio, who's our architect, when I was retiring, he said, we have to name something after Dennis. You know, as time goes on, we want him to be remembered. And there's a little meeting house opposite the locker room, and one of the members suggested, and we called it the meeting house, but one of the members suggested we call it the Satisher House. So they renamed it the Satisher House. And I took my pictures and things, Ryder Cup bag and stuff, from my office to the Satisher House. And people still use it for meetings. But, you know, I just felt like what a thoughtful and very nice thing for them to do for a guy that was there, you know, 30-plus years.
Well, you impactful is the word I would use from that standpoint. I mean, you've obviously been impactful around the industry in general because of all the assistant pros that have now taken head jobs or director of instruction and things like that. So your tree is rather large, so to speak. They probably should have named a big tree after you on the course. But from that standpoint, the respect, and I think back to, we had a conversation off air one time as I was complimenting you or commenting on your nice shirt you were wearing, and they had the logo on there. And I tell people this when they start talking about, oh, my, well, we're at a club and, you know, the members are hemming and hawing and not supporting. And I sometimes I mention your name, sometimes I don't. But I say this great professional told me not so long ago that if you can't support your own club, then something is wrong. And yeah. I'm paraphrasing, but I don't remember if you remember having that conversation with me. But, you know,
it's just the truth. You got to, you know, and I'm the football guy. I want people, my members, wearing our logo, and that tells me they're in our huddle. If they're wearing Wingfoot or Seminole or whatever, they're the lonesome end out there. And I don't know if they want to be there or if they really wanted to be here at Caves. And I had something we had some fun with. I wouldn't give them a two-shot penalty. I'd give them a two-shirt penalty. If they didn't have the logo on, I'd put two shirts in their locker.
Nice. Nice work on that. You know, it reminds me of the media when they wear Wingfoot at Carnoustie. It's like, it drives me insane. But we're with Dennis Satisher, renowned head professional, and a guy that started with a guy named Bob Toski. That's how the journey goes, full circle. We'll be back to start the second half hour after this break.
The Dalai Lama. Come on a first tee with him. I give him the driver. He hauls off and whacks one. Big hitter. The Lama. Long. Into a 10,000-foot crevice right at the base of this glacier. You know what the Lama says? Gunga Galunga. Gunga Gunga Galunga.
And we're back to start the second half hour of the show, spending it with Bob Toski. Yeah, he's in there somewhere. And Dennis Satisher.
There's time.
I know you're there, Bob. It's just, you know, this segment, Dennis and I will let you talk a little bit, I guess. But you wanted to have Dennis on. So obviously, it for good reason. Before I let you start doing that, let me talk about this package I received. It's right here. And it's got a wrapper on the back, you know, so it's not just sound effects. It's real. And it is a box with two sleeves of golf balls. They're the new Toski Tour golf balls. Congratulations, Bob. Titleist is making them for Mr. Toski. Super excited that this has come to fruition, and congratulations across the board.
What a well-done box those golf balls are in, and the things on it, Keith. Isn't it beautiful?
Absolutely, and I think you and I are in agreement. We love this Bob Toski quote. Teaching is an art, playing is a skill.
No question about it. And we're working on some projects of getting Bob at the PGA show, to show, his golf balls and the packaging he's got there. And we also would love, you know, the PGA has kind of an on-stage thing where they bring in different, professionals to talk to the people. And we're working with the PGA now to see if we can get in Bob's 100th year. He'll be 100 in the September of 26. So he'll be in his 100th year. I believe he's the oldest living member of the PGA, and certainly the oldest member that's won a PGA Tour event that's alive.
Yeah, both are correct, Mr. Satisher. Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that's a fantastic idea. But I have to tell you, because Bob and I have been together at the PGA show before, and you're going to have to get some sort of protection, some sort of enforcement, because once people find out that Toski's on the floor, or in our case, we were sitting around a table just having a little lunch, the people from the industry just recognize him, come on over, and they just keep coming. So,
well, this is a legend. This is and one of the things we did this with Lee Trevino. Bob Ford and I were up on stage with Lee Trevino at a pro-am, a charity pro-am, up in my hometown of Erie, Pennsylvania. And so Bob, who's so good at this, he said, Lee, we're going to say a name, and we want you to just tell us what you think of that person. And Lee says, okay, let it rip. So Bob goes, Arnold Palmer. And Lee goes, God, I loved Arnold. My only regret with him was that I never played that well with him because I was so busy watching him and trying to imitate him. You know, so we had, Jack Nicklaus and Gary Player. And then Bob gives him one last one. He says, this is the last one. He says, Herman. And you remember Herman was his caddy? Lee Trevino's caddy? He was a character. He was a character. So we told the story about him. But my point of this is, if we had Bob Toski on the stage at the PGA show and we said, Bob, we're going to give you a couple names here, and you just, you know, you played with him, you tell us something about him. So Bob's list would be Ben Hogan, Sam Snead, Byron Nelson, you know, and just listening to Bob talk about, you know, those guys that he played with. He beat them. He competed with them. And then he decided that that wasn't really his calling. And Bob, as you said, the players have to be somewhat selfish to be a player. And you wanted to do the teaching part of it, which is more giving than it is getting. There's plenty of satisfaction there. But for there were three guys that left their career, playing career, at the peak of their game. One was Bob Jones. You know, he left after he won the Grand Slam. Byron Nelson and Bob Toski. Bob had won five tournaments at the end of one year and the beginning of the other with that Carlings tournament, and he stopped playing at the peak of his career. Isn't that something?
Yeah.
But I would love to hear what Bob had to say about, you know, a handful of guys that he played with, you know, because you know how Bob is. He's just going to tell it like it is.
Dennis, he does that on this show all the time. We try to have him on at least once a month. He says he looks forward to it. But you say, okay, Bob, what about this? And there he goes. You know, it is, and the stories just keep coming. He can be on 52 weeks a year, and he would have different stories every week.
Well, I'd love for him to talk about his last round at the Carlings. You know, when he ended up birdieing the last hole to win the tournament, $100,000 at that time, 50 in cash and 50 in exhibitions over the next year. But, Bob, how big a swing was there? You were leading by three or four starting out, and then you got behind by three or four.
Well, I was leading by 6 shots going to the sixth hole, and I made a seven. with from the bunker. I tried to hole out. I told the caddy to take the flag out.
Oh, geez.
I was cocky. I was, you know, Polish tenacity, and airmailed it over the green in the rough. And she chipped it back on three putted. And I got to the 15th hole, I was 3 shots back. And I was calling myself a dumb Pollock and swearing and cursing. And I was 3 shots back. And
who was that? Jackie Burke was in second? Who was it?
I was playing with Jackie Burke, and he knocked it over the fence out of bounds, hit a cab out in Caldwell Road.
Oh, jeez.
And I drove the ball down the fairway on this par five and knocked it on the green, made three, and he made six.
Oh, and, boy. So now you're even.
So the last four holes, I played the par five in three, the par three in three, the par four in four, and the par four in three. So if you add up those numbers, said three, four, three, I beat the two competitors the last four holes by three or four shots to win, and by birdieing the last hole by one shot.
How long was the putt you made for birdie there, Bob? Because you had to fade around a tree, didn't you? Your second shot?
I was blocked out by the elm tree because I was on the right side of the fairway and had to fade the ball around the tree. And Jack Burke said I went through the branches, but
of course he did.
Only he would say something like that. But anyway, I did curve it around the tree. And it had so much spin on it, the right angle spin, that it went past the flag stick to the right of the flag, the 7.5 feet they measured it. And of course, Besselink had 10,000 going if I win, and he was playing with me. And the last thing he said to me before I hit the putt, he said, "Don't leave it short."
I hate it when guys say that, because then you blast the putt and hit it through the break, right? Jeez.
I knew the break. I could feel the speed. You know, I had so great, my nerves were so perfect. I just felt like when I swung the putt, God was moving it for me. And I hit it so solid and square that I said, if that doesn't go in, I can't do any better than that one right in the middle of the hole. I wrote a check out the best link for $10,000. I said, don't cash it for a week. I don't have that much money in the bank. And I wrote him out a check for $10,000 that we had a bet on the first tee. And 2 weeks later, I was at this tournament, and And that's so he walked up to me and said, I need 500. I said, 500? I just gave you 10,000. He said, the horses got me at Arlington.
Oh, man. Oh, but man.
The end of the story is in 1957, very few people know this, and it makes the story even greater because a guy by the name of Dick Mayer won the world championship in 1957.
Dick Mayer, M-E-Y-E-R. Yeah, I remember the name, sure.
And you won't believe this, Dennis, but the man that made the same bet with him for $10,000 was Al Best.
Al Best. Come on. Oh, jeez. So he picked up another 10 when Dick won?
What are the odds? That's a true story.
Zero. That never, couldn't happen again. God.
No, it wouldn't happen again in 100 years.
Yeah. Well, it's just, I love those happy those when the good guys win in the end. And when you knock that putt, I wanted to ask you, did it kind of crawl in? But you said right in the middle, you just hit it just the way you wanted to.
Well, when your mental ability and physical ability are one in an act, and you're that compatible with your mind and body, everything seems easy, and everything seems right. You know that being a great quarterback like you were.
Well,
having that sense of awareness to know how successful you're going to be when you take the snap from the center.
You just feel it. Like, we're going to do this. You know, I can do this. I can throw this pass. We're going to run this play. We're going to win this game. You know, and I think that competitiveness in all the sports, like my best playing was when I wasn't really thinking consciously about what I was doing. I could feel it, just like you're saying. I could see the pass. I could see the receiver. And yes. in a way, it was almost in slow motion. I got this. And in golf, I've had those times, and I know you have, that you felt it.
Don't forget your sense of athleticism you had. You had a lot of people don't have that, what you had. And it makes it easier when you can see your target, know where it's going, and instinctively release the football in the direction where you can catch it. And it's the same thing with putting a putter in your hand or an iron or a wood and knowing you're going to hit it one way or the other way at the target, whether you're going to curve it left or right or right or left or hit it straight. But you know, you're three-dimensional. When you're a three-dimensional player on the tour, you got a chance to win because you got so many shots.
Sure.
Let me ask you a question that you wouldn't be prepared to hear. What about this guy, this Japanese guy that's now playing in the World Series?
He's unbelievable, this guy.
Have you ever seen an athlete like this?
None. I mean, they're great athletes, but this guy is a pitcher, really a pitcher and a leadoff hitter. And he's hitting home runs like crazy and got walked four times, was on base nine times in a game, and pitched the next day and hit another home run. I've never seen anything like it, and I didn't see the Babe Ruth.
How would you account for that?
I don't know.
What makes him what he is?
Well, there's something internally there that he has a feel for. But his swing, though, Bob, his baseball swing, I've seen a commercial and just watched him, and we had a guy named Jim Fry who was a manager and a player, and he coached George Brett. And he said Brett was the best hitter he'd ever seen, and that was because his bat was flat the longest going through the hitting zone. And I said, what are you talking about, Coach? He said, the best hitters, their bat is like horizontal through the hitting zone. Well, they're not swinging up, they're not swinging down, they're flat. And when they get, you know, they see the pitch coming and they pick, you know, kind of where they're going to swing, when that bat comes through there, it's flush. It's like you told me when you were watching Hogan hit balls, every one of them was a smack. I mean,
the sound was unbelievable.
Well, that's what he does with the bat. He puts it on the ball. Now, the ball's coming 90.
Then the bat would be pretty level.
Level for a foot or a foot and a half in that middle zone there? And when that bat's going through there, it's going fast. His hips are clearing. His body is like pulling. And then that bat, that club, releases right through the ball. It's just psh, and the ball compresses like a golf ball and goes. So he's a gifted guy, and that baseball swing would be kind of like your golf swing, Bob. You know, you had that club. You knew right where that club was at all times.
And oh, yes.
I think he knows where that bat is. And, you know, a good eye and all that, but he's just pitching. I mean, when he's on pitching, they can't hit him. You know, first inning in the first game he pitched, he struck out the side, and he was the first guy up. He hit a home run.
I know, I hate to use this word, but is he a freak?
Well, there's never been anyone quite like him. Now, how long will he do this? Hard to say. I love the story about Ted Williams. You know, he's a kind of a contemporary of yours, right? You were aware of him and his great career with the Red Sox, but he was batting 400. And the last day of the season, they had a doubleheader, and he had enough at bats that he could not play and be guaranteed he was hitting 406 or something. And so the press was saying, are you going to play tomorrow, Ted? Ted said, you guys just don't get it. And he said, I'm going to play both games. And if I can, you know, get some hits and hit 400, then I have. But for me to cop out on two games, well, he went in the doubleheader like 4-for-8 or something. So he said, of course I'm going to play. I'm not going to sit out and take it, you know, left-handed. But, you know, you guys really – it took it out of the ground. I mean, there wasn't much money. You had to drive just about everywhere. You after the pro-ams, you stay for dinner and then entertain the people for letting you guys use their course. I remember the stories.
Yeah, but I must tell you this, Dennis and Keith. All these guys that I was with on tour were a little bit older than me. Demerit, Sneed, Hogan, Nelson. I mean, they were a good 10 years older than me when I learned that. And I was in awe of their ability and their age. And we were like a little fraternity. And they took me in like a kid from Boys Town.
Mm-hmm.
And my association with those men and those players were like being around the best professors in college. They were that much closer to me than you can imagine. And they were responsible for me growing up and maturing on the tour because they accepted me as a player. They had a lot of empathy for me because I was so small.
Yeah.
And that's why they called me the mouse. But I never could run as fast as a mouse. But anyway.
You told them you weighed 126. You were 117 or something, weren't you?
No, 118.
Don't cut a pound. It's so important for Toski. He's a big fatty now. I think he's at 126 as we speak. As we were Dennis Satisher, renowned head professional, most recently of Cave Valley, retired and working on some major projects with another great professional, Bob Ford, and the gem, the treasure, the legend himself, Bob Toski. We'll be back to wrap up the show. We're back for our final segment of the show. It has flown by. It is amazing to have not one outstanding guest, but two. And we've done it before, but not to this. This is, you know, this is legendary here, right here with Dennis Satisher and Bob Toski. So,
Keith, let me bring in I've become very good friends with Jim Nance, and there's some correlation between Jim and Bob. And I think we talked about this, you know, when I listened to a podcast from him, he had some advice for people, and I thought maybe it might be a good thing to bring up. Would this be an okay time?
Yeah, absolutely. Dennis, you go ahead. You have the floor, sir.
Yeah. Well, Bob, I'm listening to a podcast of Jim Nance, and he's coming to Caves to give a talk for Fred Ridley's a member there, and he, with his firm, had some people coming in, and Jim was going to give a little talk, and I was going to be up on a little stage with him and kind of asking him questions rather than him just giving a speech. And Fred suggested that I listen to this podcast. So, you know, listening to Jim Nance, I mean, it's like watching you swing a golf club. It's just so easy, you know, and he just has a way about making those of us listening to him feel comfortable. So I'm listening to him. I'm not even taking any notes because I'm just listening to him. And it was just so good. And at the end, the guy interviewing said, Jim, this has just been great. But one more thing, he said, if you have any advice to young professionals, regardless of what area, of what field they're going in, anything you might want to pass along, I'm sure they'd be glad to hear. And Jim, of course, the gentleman he is, says, well, David, thank you so much for asking, because there are a few things that over my career I found to be very valuable to me, and I'd like to share them with the people. So he says, great. So, boy, I've got my pencil sharpened. I'm going to write these down. So the first thing Jim says is, be kind. Be kind. Well, I think about Bob Toski, and he's tough when he needs to be, but he's got the biggest heart. He's as big as the state of Florida with his heart and his giving. Bob knows how to be kind. He knows how to make people feel good. So when I thought about that, it wasn't the first thing I expected to hear from him, but just being kind. How hard is it to be nice to people? It really isn't that hard. And if you made that part of who you are, that you're kind to people, that makes a lot of sense to me. His second suggestion, and this is one we'd all check the box on, is he said, have integrity. Mean what you say, say what you mean. You know, just be straight up. And we all get that and aspire and work to that, as certainly as Bob does. And the third one is, I'm not too good at this one, but this is Jim Nance's third. He said, listen. Listen to the people you work with. Listen to the people you work for. Listen. And then I love the end. The fourth one he said is, and the last he said, probably is the most important. You know, he said, be grateful. Be grateful. And, you know, I was waiting for something in the humility side, but in being grateful, you really are being humble. And when I think about all the people that helped Dennis Satisher get to where I am today, I have a list from here to Ocean Reef. I mean, it's a long one. And the guys at the top of it are guys like Bob Toski, Tom Ridge, Arnold Palmer, Tom Kite, Jim Davis, Steve Bisciotti, the owner of the Ravens, our chairman, Steve Fader, was an awesome guy. I've just had so many, but I thought, geez, being kind, having integrity, listen, and be grateful. Boy, and Jim, what he said was, in the game of life, if you can check the box on those four things, you'll never be out of the fairway. How about that, huh?
I'll tell you, that's a great way to wrap up our show. It's been great to have you on, Dennis. You know, it's Nance is something else. He's
the GOAT. He's the GOAT of broadcasters. And I after I listen to him on a game or something, I'll send him a text. And, you know, Bob, you would fall into this. I think people think that you wouldn't really tell Jim Nance how good he is because he knows and everybody tells him that. But actually, he enjoys when it's a compliment and it's sincere. Like when I tell him, boy, what a game you did last night. It was just fabulous. He said, gee, Dennis, thank you. Thank you very much. I really appreciate that. And you know, that's something that we don't do enough of sometimes to the best. But Bob Toski was the most caring, best instructor I ever had and had such an imprint, such an indelible imprint on the person that I've become. And I'll just be forever grateful to him.
We're really grateful to have you on the show, Dennis, and I'm grateful for this great show. But we're out of time. Get out there and practice your game. Bob and Dennis would want you to. Practice. Take your game to the next level. you're lucky, we'll talk to you next hour. Take care.
Get ready. It's time to tee it up with Keith Jones.
Coming up on today's show, it's the second hour of the great Bob Toski as we make time for Toski and he tells his stories to you. So stay tuned to get ready as you tee it up with Keith Jones.
All right.
Welcome to the show. So glad you'd be along, and it's a pleasure to bring you hour number two as we make time for Toski. And this hour, we're going to do some storytelling because he's full of stories, and well, people say he's full of a lot of things. But before we do that, let's welcome the great legend himself, Bob Toski, back to the show. Bob, thanks for coming on the show, as always.
Oh, it's always my pleasure, Keith.
Well, you know, you are the gem and the treasure and the legend. So I got a lot of nicknames for you. You know, you're now 99 years young, and I know people are looking forward to celebrating next year, just like throughout the year. But somebody is celebrating you already because I received this package. You said you were going to send the package. Be on the lookout for it, and I got it. And I got the Toski Tour Titleist golf balls. So first of all, thank you very much, because I know that's a limited run on those, but they came out really, really nice. You must be very, very pleased.
It's a great gift item, Keith. It's a great gift item.
Well, it is, and there's a website that everybody can go to. Again, it's a limited edition, so BobToskiPGA.com is the website to do that. And these balls, you know, I got to see the prototype down when I was visiting you a couple months ago, and now to see it actually happen so quickly, I'm just almost speechless, which I'm not speechless.
Well, you've seen a lot of golf balls, but you've never seen one like this. I think I'm the only golf pro that's living that has marketed a golf ball with my
your face is on it. His face and his cap. Yeah, the whole bit.
Yeah, and then it says Toski Tour, which means I was a tour player, and the golf ball is almost as good as the Pro V.
Well, it's better because you have a pro on there, the face of a pro on there, and Bob has this great quote on the box: "Teaching is an art, playing is a skill." And I love that because it's you in a sentence, but at the same token, because you have skill and that you are an artist, it takes a certain person. And the fact that you have played at the highest level and then taught at the highest level, there aren't many people that have done that ever.
That's true. That is a fact. I think I'm one of the few pros that was a successful tour player and then became a successful teacher to make the Hall of Fame. I think there's only one or two other people that did that. Armour is one of them. He was a great player and became quite a teacher. So, and then you got Butch Harmon, who won the Masters, I believe. And it's pretty hard to pick more than three or four people that have done what I've done.
Well, true, yeah. Butch's dad, for sure, you know, went and has a green jacket, and yeah, it is amazing. I mean, you are certainly in a very small fraternity.
Yes, but that was the greatest part about it. Being we needed each other. We knew we weren't making a lot of money, but we needed each other to try to keep the ability of the player to play at his best. And it was always Demerit walking by and looking at my swing, or Sam walking by and looking at my swing and saying, well, just try a little bit of this and see what that's like. And you get these little tips that you remember, which help you to understand how to make your swing a little more competitive and consistent. And I'm grateful to all these great guys that I played with, which were older than me. And, of course, they've all left me. And the memories I have of especially Jimmy Demerit and Sam Snead and Bonner Nelson, they just stick out in my mind so deeply that every day I seem to think about them and wonder why it happened to me. But I never thought I'd ever be successful on the tour. I just wanted to make a living. But they all told me I had the ability in the golf swing to become a much better player, and it happened.
And Toski, to be able to teach it as well, because it doesn't always transcend, that's a big deal. And I want to also mention something else where I think you were quite a bit of a trailblazer, and it gets overlooked a bit. You did golf analysis on television. You were the analyst, and that was early on as well.
Yes, I worked for Hughes Television Network.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked with the announcer for the Green Bay Packers.
Oh, right, Ray Scott.
And Ray Scott was a great guy. And I remember one time his wife said to him, when they had a break on the air, she said, "Ray, you got to let Bob talk more. You don't give him enough time."
Well, you know, you are a man of few words sometimes, especially when you're teaching the golf swing. But that's the thing, too, because nowadays you watch golf on television. A lot of times I watch it with the sound down, because I can't stand the drabble. And Frank Cherkinian, long rest his soul, certainly, you know, demanded the best from his announcers. But I feel like that whole thing has slid away, and people they're just talking and, you know, telling you that you know, if he hits his putt right, it's going to go in the hole. Really, that is groundbreaking news.
You know, when I went on the air for the first time, he says, "I'm going to count down from 5 to 1. And then after 1, I'm going to say, smile, because the only thing you got going for you are your teeth." And when he hit 1, he would say that. And then they would close in on me. And everybody says, "God, you look like you were so happy to be on TV." Well, I was really laughing. It's Cherkinian.
Well, that's the one thing that's also great about the artwork on the box, and that is the picture of you. You're showing your teeth. You're showing those pearly whites. So that has got Toski written all over that picture.
Yeah, thanks.
Oh,
but
man.
You know, if it hadn't been for golf, I don't know what I would have done with my life. And you know, as I said before, I'll say it again, when I played on tour, to beat 150 guys, you had to be self-centered and selfish. You had to think about only one person, you, how to succeed. But when you start teaching, you're sharing your knowledge about how you became successful and how you swung the club. And knowledge then becomes power transmitted into physical energy. And the physical energy is to be able to talk to people and make them understand why you were good with a golf swing and how they could be better with a golf swing. So I simplify it. I simply would say because so many of them were high handicap players and had very little knowledge of the golf swing. And I would say, oh, you know what the letter C looks like? And they say, yes. I say, well, that's all it is an inverted C. And I would ask them if they understood what an inverted C was. Most of them knew, some didn't. And it's then I explained how the swing was inverted by the lowering of the swing plane from the top of the swing, which once you lower the plane, you keep the club head from unwinding or accelerating too early, and you have conservation of angular momentum. And by the time you get to the ball, you're releasing that energy just before you get to the ball to let the club head find the ball with the greatest amount of speed. Hopefully that the weight of the club head and the weight of the entire club is creating enough momentum to compress the ball and drive it forward in the direction you want it to go. But the problem today with so many players, Keith, is they swing the club with so much speed compared to what we did, 120 miles now, 130, that the control of the club face at impact is very difficult, and they have a lot of airmail but no zip code. And that's the problem with speed. It can kill. It in golf, it doesn't kill you physically, but it makes you feel mentally incapable of controlling your golf swing as well as you'd like. So golf has changed in that they drive the ball so far today that they have nothing but short irons into the green. And where we used to hit wood clubs, the par fives, they're hitting seven irons. So the courses really aren't long enough for them. And that's why the scores are so low, because they don't have to hit fairway woods and long irons into the green. So it makes it much easier for them to control the ball with the club face and get it closer to the flag stick. And it's a matter simply then of holding the putt. But the game has changed because the players are so tall and so strong, and they have more leverage. They have more time to build speed from the upper part of their body into the lower part. And, of course, the golf swing is a matter of the lower part helping it to stabilize the upper part of your body and to keep the body in balance. And you get in balance through your feet and legs. And if you swing at a rate of speed that some of them do, they almost twist their body out of position. So it's pretty obvious. You can see that if you know what to look at when you're watching television.
Well, it's like they come out of their shoes, and there's no
yes,
question
yes.
about that. And the balance thing, I think, is paramount there. Bob made a fantastic point. You got to keep everything in balance, and the results will show you that you're doing a good job. Bob Toski spending the hour with us. We're going to get some more stories about the greats of the game and, of course, instruction along the way. It's Bob spending the hour with us. We're pleased to bring you this second hour and make time for Toski.
Hi, this is John O'Hurley reminding you you're listening to Tee It Up with Keith Jones. I haven't been this excited since I discovered I couldn't lick my elbow.
We We are back with Bob Totski, the multi-Hall of Famer, our go-to guy, a gem, certainly a treasure, and no question about being a legend. The last living link between yesteryear and today's game, and it is amazing to think 99 years young, and we will do everything we can to celebrate in 2026, which will be Bob's 100th year, leading all the way up to his September birthday. And the guys that are, I think it's fantastic that guys like Dennis Satishier has had the stream this idea of taking you up on stage at the PGA Merchandise Show in January. That would be super special and super fantastic. And hopefully you can do a little road. I think you can probably drive over there. Not you drive. We can send a driver and drive you over to the show, so you don't have to even hop in a plane.
I'm gonna have somebody drive me up there. Yeah,
that makes total sense. But that'll be a fantastic. If and when it gets pulled off, we're gonna do our due diligence and see if we can't get our contacts to say this is a great idea, because it is a great idea. So I'm glad somebody else came up with it, but I'm happy to help make the great idea come to fruition, because it's just way too important. And, you know, I have to admit, we have been very selfish, me personally as well, on this show, because we've monopolized Totski for the last 15-plus years. But you know what? We're happy with that. We're fine with that. We find no guilt in that. Because if other entities aren't smart enough to say, here's a guy that remembers 55, 65, 75, 85 years ago and everything that happened in between and is so knowledgeable about the golf swing and the game of golf and the players and everything else, not my fault that they are not tapped into this beautiful fountain of youth with a big well attached to it. So thank you, Bob.
How many people would meet a guy like Walla Hagen? I met Walla Hagen, and I never thought I'd ever meet that man in my life. And here I'm in Detroit, and he taps me on the shoulder in the parking lot. He says, are you Bob Totski? I said, yes, sir. He said, I'm Mr. Hagen. I said, yes, I know. And we stopped and had quite a chat. So that's the way life goes. You meet the best, you play with the best, you learn from the best. And I've always had this philosophy that you live to learn, and then you learn how to live.
Fantastic words from Bob Totski, who has played with virtually everyone and certainly met those who may have come before him a little older and such in the golf history and stuff. And we've learned a lot from Bob over the years as well, and treasure our friendship and our relationship and the goodness of a guy that constantly gives. It is amazing what Bob continues to do for the game of golf. And been doing this show since March of 1998. And yes, it seems like a century ago for me, but I've been so fortunate, as Bob alluded to have come across so many fantastic people in and around this game.
I can't believe you and I have been on for 15 years.
I was trying to go back in the archives. I know it was at least 2010 when I found some archives. It may have been longer than that, but at least that long. I know it is crazy, and it is insane.
It only seems like a couple of years.
Yeah, true. I had to check. I was like, well, okay, here's 2010. Has anything happened before then? I don't know. I was trying to recall, because I suffer from CRS, and Bob can, I can barely remember 53 days ago. Bob can remember 53 years ago. I'm trying to remember when Bob and I actually met. I think it might have been at the PGA Merchandise Show, but I am unsure as I sit here.
Yeah, I remember when we were in the lobby there talking, and all of a sudden we had a gallery.
That's one of my favorite stories to tell, because talking to Dennis Satishier off air, we were talking about his idea, or the idea they'd come together about getting you to the PGA show, and I just know that if this happens, there's got to be some sort of security or something, you know, some human chain around you, because you get stopped every 3 seconds. Bob Totsky. People see that's Totsky. You know, and it's like we're sitting, Bob and I were just having lunch. Just a little. Bob says, "Hey, let's go out in the lobby and, you know, sit at a table and have some lunch." We start doing that, and then one person walks by and does the double take and ends up, "Do you mind if I sit down?" "No, that's all right." And then another one, and then another one. And it's like, I think it was a table for 12, and we had standing room only. It was crazy. And lunch, we, you know, forget that. That's the game over then.
You got to do me a favor, Keith.
Okay, Bob, hang on a second. Let me go to a break, and when we come back, I will do Bob a favor.
The Dalai Lama. Come on a first tee with him. I give him the driver. He hauls off and whacks one. Big hitter.
The Lama.
Long. Into a 10,000 foot crevice right at the base of this glacier. You know what the Lama says? Gunga Galunga. Gunga Gunga Galunga.
And we're back to start the second half hour of the show, spending it with our legend, Bob Totsky, in-house. And I think I'm about to do a favor for Bob. What is the favor I can do for you, young man?
God willing, I turn 100. You must be at my birthday party.
Oh, I will, sir. Believe me. I may make a few trips next year to see you. But yeah, definitely, I've got that. But now I have to check the calendar because I know there was a little crossing communications in house for this.
Yeah, I'm planning
this year.
On entertainment you won't believe.
Oh my God, it's better than the Hula Girls. How can that be? I don't know.
I'm sorry?
Better than the Hula Girls? I don't know how that can be.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I had Hula Girls this year. But I'll let you know in the next show what I'm planning to do.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, I'm not going to miss it. I wouldn't miss it. And, you know, again, we're going to celebrate. We're going to, as Dennis Satisher says, we're going to celebrate Bob Totsky's 100th year all year. And I'm totally in on that. So that'll be great. So.
You won't believe this, but I had a talk with Tom Kite the other day, and we had a great talk. And before I hung up, I said, "Tom, you owe me a favor of all the help I've given you." And I said, "You got to come to my birthday party if I'm 100. I said, "You better show up." And he says, "I'll be there."
All right, so you know, this is a problem that you're creating because there will be a lot of other people that want to come to your party, regardless of whether you invite them or not, or insist that they come. So, are you doing like this super grand ballroom? Have you picked out the venue yet? Are you thinking about the venue? Because I know it's usually 100-ish people. I mean, I'm looking at like
the ballroom can hold about 130 or 40 people. So
yeah.
Depending on how much money you want to spend and how many people you want to have enjoy the dinner and the entertainment.
Yeah, but I think that, you know, Totsky, the days of Totsky paying for his own birthday party, as great as it is, you know, that might be coming to an end. So we might have to figure out a fundraiser.
I plan to probably have that be my last one.
Your birthday party?
Yep.
Well, hopefully it's only because you don't want to, you know.
At 101, I want to probably just stay home.
Okay, that's fair. Yeah, I'll let you do that. As long as you're sitting upright, that's fine. Yes, yes.
Pick up the phone and go on the air with you.
that would be my honor, sir, to do that. You know, we're doing a birthday show for you anyway. But you know, Totsky's on at least once a month, and because we can, and he wants to, and he can, and you know, it's just the stories and stuff.
I just hope I have the voice that I have now, so I don't sound like I'm halfway down below the earth.
You don't. I tell people, you know, if you didn't, you know, if you never ran into Bob, you wouldn't know he's 99. He doesn't look 99, whatever that actually looks like. But he looks you know, a bit younger than that. But when somebody hears you on the show, they have no idea. Unless I say Bob is 99 years old, they're like, I've never known anybody 99 years old. I know.
Oh, God bless America.
Yeah, indeed, indeed. And, you know, oh, yeah, let's throw that in there, too. God bless America. Bob is also a vet. He is a veteran of the armed forces and was in World War II. So do that. I've been meaning to say this. So I had an opportunity recently to get to Hawaii. So I saw some different hula girls than you saw. But I went to Pearl Harbor. I was always planning on going to Pearl Harbor. And my friend Tyson, I do some volunteering for the National Park Service, you know, not to get too personal in, you know, in my nonsense, but anyway, and he was my volunteer coordinator, and then he got transferred. He wanted to transfer to Pearl Harbor, and he got the job, and he happened to be working the day while I was at Pearl Harbor, and we actually got to go out because the Navy's doing renovation work on the ship because it's very, very old, and pieces are coming off and such. So the Navy divers are there and the welders and stuff. So they're really limiting the boats that go out to the USS Arizona, which is an unbelievable memorial. But on that day, we were able to go out on one of the boats, and it was beyond moving. It was incredible. It was probably beyond what I was thinking it was going to be. But the other thing was we went to Ford Island, and that's where the USS Oklahoma and the USS Utah are based. The Oklahoma is not there at all. There's just a memorial for there, which is quite moving, the outstanding work that they did to put that memorial together on land. But the Utah is still in the water, and there's now a walking bridge to get out there to get close to them. And the last remaining service member that was involved with the Utah passed recently. So, you know, that was after I got back. But that was, you wouldn't know, Bob, that was a ship because it's so rusted and it just looks like this bent metal that's in the water. But somebody recognized, because it's on a naval base, the Ford Island naval base there, or the naval base on Ford Island. So you had to get special permission to go on and such. And my park ranger buddy.
But to see something like that had to be very moving for you.
Oh, it was so beyond. I mean, you see the Arizona Memorial, USS Arizona Memorial all the time because it's pictures. It's kind of the more vibrant landmark, if you will, right? But you don't get to see the Utah, and you don't get to see and hear all the backstories. And my friend Tyson is an outstanding park ranger, but he happened to do both parts of that tour for me, and he was phenomenal with his knowledge and his understanding and the way he broke it down and saying these guys that were on the Utah deserve the same sort of recognition as the guys that were on the Arizona, because there were a lot of ships blown up that day. On December 7th. And there's actually a movie that they show you, and you see the Japanese planes taking off from the aircraft carrier. And I asked about that. I'm like, how do you have this footage? Because the Japanese, it was such a monumental move in the war, or the pending war military move, that they decided to video all of this. So you see it all, and it is just the movie itself is just beyond belief, as you see.
Beyond words.
Yeah, yes, absolutely. But to see all the other stuff on Ford Island was just incredible. Yeah, you're just gutted.
The sailors and the people that were on the Utah still beneath the water?
Yes, there's. I forgot how many. What the number was? Yes, they are.
Oh my God!
Well, you know, and Bob, here we are. 80 plus years later, and they're still recovering. You know, now it's based on DNA, right? Science has come so far about that, so they're actually able to identify the people who perished.
Bodies, yeah.
Yeah, you know, verify that they were actually indeed on and such. So that whole Oh yeah, it's a lot. That's
wonderful to know.
Yeah, so that is, you know, because closure, you're bringing closure to the families and close, you know, and so it was an unbelievable experience it's a must, you know, and you being World War II veteran, I mean, it just, again, lost for words.
I was fortunate enough to survive. I never did get any combat, but I was one day away from combat. And fortunately for me, Harry dropped the bomb on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and the war ended that fast. And I was fortunate enough to be able to stay alive and come home.
Yeah, and I was amazed also at the number of Japanese visitors to Pearl Harbor. It was interesting that way, too.
Well, when I saw Pearl Harbor at 18 years of age, I became a patriot. I wanted to go to war. I wanted to. I hate to say this, but I hated the Japanese. My heart just wanted to go to war and even to score, because what I saw at Pearl Harbor, that incensed me because of the sneak attack that they paid on our country. Till this day, until I went to Japan and met the people, then I had a different idea of what it was all about. Because it was a small minority of people that wanted the war.
Right. And that's what's interesting in getting a chance to talk to a couple of Japanese visitors. It's part of their history, and it's a you know, very meaningful for that country as well, because of what ended up happening. People got incinerated when those bombs got dropped on Japan. So yeah,
isn't it interesting? In the year of 2025. We have a Japanese superstar in baseball.
Yeah, you know, and there's a number of Japanese players, but yeah, the superstar is pretty amazing. That is true. We've come a long way that way,
amazing. Yeah,
yeah. But everybody wants to be in Major League Baseball, just like the international basketball players want to be in the NBA. It's just this American draw of these top level sports leagues. That's just the way it is. Although the Japanese love their baseball, and as a matter of fact, there are a number of Americans playing in the Japanese leagues. But they get treated very, very well. So Toski-san knows a little bit about what's going on that way too.
Well, that was the first game. Really, that was invented. Baseball was invented a lot more before any of the other sports.
True. 1899. I'm trying to remember. I used to have that date down very vividly. No, 1869, I think, because 1969 was the Major League Baseball All-Star Game in Washington, D.C. And so I think that was the 100th year. So maybe 1869 is it. Football came later. American football supposedly started at Rutgers. And we're doing a lot of history lessons. Like, I thought this was a golf show. This is a show where we talk about everything impactful in life.
Yeah, well, you talk about some great speeches. How about the one that was made by Lou Gehrig?
Yes. Yeah,
that's one of the greatest I've ever heard.
Well, you know, and it still gets played. I mean, not just if you go to the Baseball Hall of Fame, but it gets played. You know, the luckiest man alive. That will tug on your heartstrings too. You know, guys that were blessed, and he only got into the game by chance to become the great that he became because Wally got injured. So that was it, and that happens, and that happened kind of in football too, in the NFL with a guy named Brady and Bledsoe. So you just never know when your opportunities come, and that's what Toski was. Toski came up playing golf with his brothers who were older than him.
Right.
His brother Jack was a big impactful person in his life. They said, Bob, you have what we don't have. You can be successful on the golf course. Go out there and do it. And Bob Toski says, I'm 118 pounds and, you know, and kind of short. And how am I going to compete against these guys? But, you know, the tenacity and the work ethic and the willing to work and the God-given talent that was figured out, or the skill level that you had developed has certainly made a huge difference.
Interesting to note that Jack never mentioned my weight. He just kept telling me, you can succeed if you get a great golf swing, and that's what he attempted to do, is to build a very sound, consistent golf swing, and to a great extent, he succeeded. And then from there, going on tour was the icing on the cake.
Well, I think these Toski golf balls, people that are lucky enough to get them at BobToskiPGA.com, will probably get them some great golf swings. And you never know what comes in a box.
Yeah, I think it's a great gift item, don't you?
Absolutely. It was a great gift. Bob says, I got a package coming. Be on the lookout. And I'm like, okay. And then, you know, this shows up. It's like one of the greatest gifts ever, especially when I saw the prototype when I was visiting you back in September. It was interesting because seeing it on paper, it's like, yeah, this is a good idea. But to actually have it come to fruition is a big, big, big deal.
Well, I'm pretty proud of what happened, and I'm looking forward to having some success with it.
Oh, I would think so. You know, you got an opportunity where it's a limited run right now, but when they sell out, then the Titleist is going to get back to the manufacturing line and pump a bunch more out. So
don't you think that we have two things? You got a great name, you got a great product, and now it's a question of marketing.
Yeah, absolutely, and we're happy to help however we can on this show. And every time Toski comes on, we'll check and see how things are going. But
well,
you know,
I hope that people get interested in having a thought of buying these through the effort of what's happened with you and I and Dennis.
Yeah, I think that Dennis is certainly on to something. You know, with the PGA show
Dennis is really big time, really.
Oh yeah, yeah. I know it's great, and you know, the fact that he came to see you, he drove all the way from Durham, North Carolina, down to Ocean Reef, which is in Florida, but apparently it's really, really far down there, Bob. So
I thought it was funny when he got to Miami. He thought he was at Ocean Reef. He had another hour to go.
We're with Bob Toski, the legend himself, and we're going to be wrapping up the show in just one more segment, but. Bob Toski has these new golf balls, BobToskiPGA.com. Teaching is an art, playing is a skill. So says Bob Toski, and they are fantastic. Titleist golf balls, Trufeel. You will love them. We'll be back after this break to wrap up the show with Toski.
Hi, this is Bob Toski, and you're listening to Tee It Up with Keith Jones. And we'll be right back. I'll keep my pants on.
Back for our final segment of the show. It is a pleasure to spend time with this young man, 99 years of age and going strong, always with this stuff. Who is the tallest player you played with on tour? Was it Sam Snead or someone else?
George Archer. How's that for a name?
That's a good one. I haven't heard George's name mentioned for a while. He was a good player. He's a guy that... probably doesn't get the recognition that he once did, and
right.
Certainly had a good all around game.
Oh, yes, and he's a wonderful putter. A wonderful putter. Well, and, of course, you had George Bear, who was a football player and then turned to golf. And George Bear and I played a lot of golf together. And I remember playing an exhibition with him in Tucson, Arizona with Lloyd Mangrum. And I'd walk down the fairway, and I said, George, walk with me so they can see how big you are and how small I am. He says, I'm not walking with you. You go ahead and walk ahead. I'll stay behind you.
He wasn't playing into that, huh?
Well, to add to the misery, I beat him. I shot 65, and he shot 70, I think. And I beat him by 5 shots, and I said, you see, you don't have to be big and strong like you are to play this game, because the golf club only weighs about 16 ounces. And that's less than not even a pound. And the ball's 1.62 ounces. So it's a question of how you use your body to create force, which is a swinging force, and creating acceleration at and to impact. And I did that about as well as anybody for my size. And of course, when you beat a man that's as big as George, I just told you that on the show that I love to bring him down to my size. And that made me feel good to know that I could beat all these guys regardless of how big and strong they were.
Well, and he didn't want to walk with you. That kind of, you know, you demoralized him. You just totally destroyed his confidence.
Well, you know, the swing is a thing, and how you time the swing and how you control it is a work of art.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question of that. You would know both, because leading money winner on tour and then successful golf professional and teacher, and as I like to call you, the godfather of the golf swing, which I think is pretty accurate, because there weren't too many people, if any, coming before you. There were some guys along with you, but there weren't too many people before that were actually teaching the game at all.
No, that's true. And to think that I'm probably the only golf pro that had a successful career with golf schools, which went for 20 years with Golf Digest. And for 20 years, I was teaching Golf Digest. They used to call them the Golf Digest School, but people that came to my school, that were my pupils, called it the Bob Towski School.
Well, should have. Well, you guys still got a great relationship with Jerry Tardy of Golf Digest. And I think Jerry's somewhere still working at Digest. I don't know. I think he's emeritus something, but yeah.
He's the CEO.
Yeah, that's the same thing as, you know, just kind of emeritus.
Yeah, whatever.
Exactly.
I told you, I don't know if you knew the story about the time he and I played Sam's Need and Bill Davis, the owner of Golf Digest.
No, I don't think so.
And we played at Brookline.
Oh, boy. I've been there.
And Jerry and I beat Sam and Bill Davis for $40. Sam threw the money down on the floor in the locker room and said, Bob, you can pick that up and take it with you. He threw the money on the floor.
He couldn't stand to hand it to you. That's what it was.
He was so mad that he got beat.
You do that to people. You make people mad, Toski, when you beat them.
So, yeah, but to beat Sam Snead.
I know. I'm with you. I'm not saying you mean good for you. Good on you. Good on you.
Of course, I had Jerry Tardy, who was Jerry had a handicap that was a false handicap. He was much better than the handicap he had, and he was responsible with his handicap for helping win the match, because if he had strokes and he'd get pars, it'd be birdies.
Right. Unbelievable. So thanks so much for coming on the show. We're just out of time. The great Bob Towski, the legend, the gem. Get out there and practice your game. Towski would want you to. Practice. Take your game to the next level, and we will talk to you next week. Take care.